Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tree City Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Baker, here as usual with my co-host, Graham Moan. Say hello to the people.
Hello, you guys are hearing my voice yet again.
Yeah, you've been hearing a lot of Graham. I'm so sorry for that.
Hey, if you didn't hear, a Red and Blue podcast just came out, so check that out. But
yes, sir. Champions and Premier League both cleaning up here.
And on that podcast, we also teased that we were going to talk NBA on the next Tree City Sports Podcast, and that's what we're here to do.
Here we are. The NBA, it's a very busy time period right now. The pre-conference finals, the conference semifinals, I should say, series just wrapped up, which the Cavs are definitely not a part of. But the NBA draft lottery is tomorrow night, which the Cavs definitely are a part of.
We're going to send our lucky and, charm, too.
Yeah, sure. Nick Gilbert. There you go. Nick Gilbert's already won us the lottery, what, twice?
Twice, yeah.
Well, what's wrong with a third time in, what,
like 7 or 8 years? God, yeah.
The NBA would hate us, but that's okay. We'll talk about that later. The more pressing matter is the Cavs have a new head coach.
Yes, they do. It just happened.
And it's John Beilein from Michigan. So for a little bit of background, he's 66 years old, which, yes, yikes, that's old. That said, he has been considered to be an NBA caliber head coach for quite some time. He has been extremely successful in college. He has done it without top prospects, which is, I would say, good, but you could also argue, you know, he hasn't had a lot of super high-end talent guys. But
I mean, he got Michigan to the national championship in 2 years.
The Cavs don't have high-end talent right now anyway, so it's okay. I think from a player development perspective, it's an encouraging hire because he has a history of developing young players and turning two or three or four-star recruits into really good players.
Y'all remember our boy Manny Harris?
Yeah, I mean, he's not a one-and-done coach like Coach Cal or some other, you know, big-name college basketball coaches. And I think in some ways, it's just from a player development perspective, it can be an encouraging hire. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think they checked two of the three boxes that I think you look for, that I think the Cavs ideally were looking for, which is a young head coach with player development experience.
He says young.
Yeah. That was the one box they didn't check because he's 66 and he's a first-time head coach. But he's a first-time head coach, so they did check that box. And he's good with player development because he spent – over a decade at Michigan building that program up to being one of the better programs in the Big Ten, which for Michigan basketball is not usually the case. That's usually a Wisconsin or even an Ohio State or just those teams in college basketball or Indiana. Just those teams are usually much better than Michigan, and he's got them into the Sweet 16 several times. He made it to two championship games. He won a championship.
Yeah, he's got an impressive resume.
He has made a lot of guys overachieve in terms of their talent. Because when you saw a lot of them go to the NBA, most of the Michigan guys don't end up being great pros, which is even more of a testament to him because he got the most out of them when they were in school. And like Andrew said, he developed a lot of those guys. Most of those guys were not there for just 1 or 2 years. They were there for the long term. So I think that's a great part about this hire. If we're going to talk about the positives, is that he is able to develop players.
And he's considered to be an extremely, extremely high character individual.
Yeah.
I mean, people will rave about his character. And I think that, you know, hiring a high character head coach who has player development experience and is widely respected by his peers is a good thing. I think there's a lot of concerns with the move as well. First of all, the age is a factor.
He's the oldest first-time head coach in NBA history.
Yeah, that's...
that's not enough.
Yeah. And I
66.
Think...
I don't want to pigeonhole him by his age, but that's kind of odd that this is his first head coaching job.
I think what the Cavs are hiring him for, I'm assuming, is to develop the young roster, not to coach the team throughout the playoffs for years. Kind of like Brett Brown did with the Process Sixers.
Yeah.
I think he's here to develop young players, teach a bunch of kids, get them to maybe the playoffs, and then kind of bow out. The thing is, the process is what concerns me. Because, once again, this is the Dan Gilbert Cavaliers. And I feel like I sound like a broken record, but it's really hard to parse out the mistakes the Cavs have made with Dan Gilbert. Because, quite frankly, the majority of the mistakes the Cavs have made
are Dan Gilbert's
fault. Are Dan Gilbert's decisions. And, and
I mean, he's the reason we don't have LeBron anymore, pretty much.
When Kobe Altman, who's the Cavs GM, who might as well just be some ball boy at this point because he obviously doesn't have any control of the situation. When he talked about his coaching search, which is his first as an NBA general manager, he said we want a young player development focused first-time NBA head coach, like you said. And the Cavs checked first-time NBA head coach and player development coach. That's fine. But Kobe Altman interviewed a lot of candidates, and I think the shocking thing about this is, and this is not a rumor, this is like solid reporting. Kobe Altman interviewed four NBA assistant coaches in Denver over the weekend. Most of them were in that, you know, Denver
in
or
that series.
Denver or Portland assistant coaches, which I think is smart because those are younger teams that have developed and are showing they can win in the playoffs. And I think those are both, you know, Mike Malone for Denver and Terry Stotts for Portland are both head coaches that have shown they can develop young talent and create winners. And I think that thought process makes a lot of sense. But this is the thing that scares me is, dang, this is clearly, look, the Cavs are going to sell this as, you know, we've made this choice together, and they're going to sell this as Kobe Altman's happy about this. And maybe Kobe Altman's not mad at it. I don't know. Okay. I don't know Kobe Altman.
Right.
But this is a Dan Gilbert decision. And there is, you will not ever talk to me and tell me this is not a Dan Gilbert decision. No,
He's a Michigan guy.
And that's the thing is, it's like he went after Tom Izzo for all these years and he didn't get him. And now I guess he threw enough money at Beeline that Beeline decided to take
it. We don't know the details of the contract, but if I guess, I bet he overpaid
Beeline. Well, it's 5 years and it's got to be $30 million because Beeline said no to the NBA before. And there's and Dan Gilbert.
Even last year, he said no to the Pistons.
If you say anything good about Dan Gilbert, it's the fact that he'll spend money. But this is the thing is one of the assistant coaches that Kobe Altman was looking to interview, that interview was supposed to happen today.
Yeah.
And Dan Gilbert apparently himself, not Kobe Altman, Dan Gilbert was negotiating with Beeline over the weekend. And it's just.
I wonder if I hope.
At a certain point, I can look at the John Beeline hire and say, probably not a bad hire. He is not going to be the coach long term, and that's kind of a concern.
Yeah.
But he is a player development focused head coach who everyone who has played for really respects, and that's fine. But it's a Dan Gilbert choice. And if Dan Gilbert is still running the organization and making basketball decisions and refusing to let the people he has hired to make those basketball decisions make the decisions, it's really hard to like the process of what happened here. And that doesn't mean Beeline's going to be a bad head coach, and it doesn't mean the Cavs can't hire a top assistant for him, which it rumors they're going to be – could be
J.B.
Bickerstaff, who has been a head coach before but is still young. It could be some other guy, whatever. It just – I think that the result of this might be fine, but the process scares the hell out of me. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's a really difficult thing because the owners usually are the people that help set the tone and the culture for a team in the NBA. With such a small group of guys, it really does even more of a top-down approach as opposed to other leagues where there's a lot more players and a lot more development and a lot more just moving parts. Whereas in the NBA, there's a lot less moving parts. There's really just more direct lines. And that's the scary part is that Dan Gilbert's not qualified to make basketball decisions. He doesn't have a background in basketball. He hasn't been in personnel, and he's been the one making a lot of these decisions. Part of that lost us LeBron. Part of that got us drafting Colin Sexton, which the book is still out on Colin Sexton, but that was a Dan Gilbert pick. And if the owner is going to make all the decisions, there's no point in having the GM. I feel bad for Kobe Altman because I think a lot of the moves Kobe Altman made throughout this past season were good moves for the Cavs because he gained assets while taking on money because he knew the Cavs weren't going to be good.
Yeah, he made simple, sensible moves.
Yeah, he didn't make groundbreaking moves, but he made small moves that can make the Cavs incrementally better because I think he realizes this is going to be a project. The Cavs are not going to be good right away. In fact, the Cavs might not be good for like 5 years. And that's the thing is that Gilbert wants to do all these things, wants to do all these pieces, and he wants control because he thinks he can turn the Cavs into a contender. He said the Cavs were going to be a playoff team last year, and the Cavs were very much not a playoff team.
Yeah, they're not a playoff team, not at all. Well, I think the moves that Kobe Altman has made have looked pretty good so far.
Yeah.
The problem is all the major decisions are being made by Dan Gilbert.
And that's a big issue.
If you look at the Kevin Love extension, which right now doesn't look too good, because quite frankly, Kevin Love is an aging player who's had a lot of injury problems and is getting paid monster money.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be hard to find someone to take that contract, which we've discussed before.
Yeah.
And again, I love Kevin Love, okay? But it's probably not a smart basketball decision. If you look at the Colin Sexton pick, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander went two picks later and looks like a potential star. And maybe Kobe Altman liked Colin Sexton more than SGA. Maybe he didn't. But again, Dan Gilbert had heavy influence in that pick.
Yeah.
Maybe without Dan Gilbert around or the influence of Dan Gilbert, maybe that pick was different and it was SGA. And right. I don't think there's any doubt right now that you would rather have SGA than Colin Sexton.
And who knows? Maybe and they now, would have traded up for a different player. They don't know. We don't know that.
I know. And now you're looking at this coaching hire and you're saying, like, I want to be excited because he's John Beilein again. He's a high character guy, player development coach. He's a guy that the NBA has courted before. It's not like this is totally out of the blue.
Respected. I like that.
It's just if the general manager has a vision for the team, and that vision is to hire a young, first-time NBA head coach, and the owner says, you know what? No, we're hiring this 66-year-old guy. It's just not – the Cavs, I look, everything that Dan Gilbert has done as a Cavs owner, a lot of success, a lot of not success, a lot of success that's pretty much only when LeBron's around. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I think – look, if Dan Gilbert – I don't want to go down this path again, but I have to say it one time. If Dan Gilbert would shut up and let his basketball people do basketball stuff, right now LeBron, Paul George, and Kyrie, or Kevin Love would probably still be on the Cavs roster right now. Because that's
Griffin,
a fact.
And David Griffin would still be the GM.
Because David Griffin would still be here. And
he was the one person.
And I know that we've moved on from all that, and this isn't about David Griffin, who just got hired to be the head basketball man in New Orleans.
Which, oh, he did good.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
And I just...
It's a good project for
him. I don't want to rehash all of that, but again, I think on face value, Beilein makes some sense. It's just concerning because he's not going to be your head coach long term. I mean, he's not going to be alive that much more long term. Okay. And it just, if Dan Gilbert's going to keep hijacking these decisions, the Cavs just can't be successful because you have two strings pulling opposite directions, and then eventually the smart basketball guy gets fired because Dan Gilbert says, you don't do what I want enough. You know what I mean? And I just – that's what's concerning about it. Time will tell whether Beilein is a good NBA head coach. I think there is a pretty decent chance he is a good NBA head coach. And maybe they find the right number two and make a succession plan. It all works out nice and neat. I just question anything that Dan Gilbert is doing because he has proven that he makes bad choices.
It's pretty hard to trust him with anything that has his fingerprints on it when it comes to basketball decisions. Yeah.
Well, speaking of trusting Dan Gilbert with big decisions, the Cavs have a big decision coming up soon, and that's in the NBA draft. Now, maybe the draft lottery is tomorrow night. The Cavs have a 14% chance of the number one pick.
But they also could pick
and
fifth.
And a 40-something percent chance of having a top three pick. And a 48% chance of picking fifth or sixth. So
that would be brutal.
Tomorrow is a massive, massive day, not just for the Cavs, but for the entire NBA. Because let's face it, this year's draft has Zion Williamson.
Yeah.
And Zion Williamson is, depending on which scout you ask, the best NBA draft prospect since Anthony Davis or Kevin Durant or LeBron goddamn mother effing James. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's not an exaggeration here. And we're not saying Zion is LeBron because he's not. But what we're saying is every talent evaluator says that Zion Williamson is one of the biggest can't-miss massive prospects of the past 20 years.
Let's make it real simple. Whoever wins the draft lottery, they're taking Zion.
And that,
without hesitating. Yeah. They're
Dan Gilbert can't stop that. James Dolan can't stop that. No idiot
it's
owner
It's
kind
of like when
that.
Gund was the owner of the team when we won the lottery with LeBron. And they're like, who are you going to pick? He's like, oh, I don't know. We haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
You knew as soon as you won that lottery, you were taking LeBron. Yeah. If the Cavs win the lottery, there's no question they will take Zion.
Look, I don't think Zion's going to be as good as LeBron, but I think Zion's going to be a really, really freaking good NBA
No,
player.
But he is the exact kind of talent that could help a small market team like the Cavs, a team that's not going to draw free agents, the team that only drew free agents or high trade candidates when they have LeBron.
And they barely even did that.
No, I mean, they had to trade for Kevin Love, and then they got lucky with Kyrie.
Oh, we can't forget Larry Hughes.
Oh, God.
I try to forget Larry Hughes. But, yeah, I mean, look. Zion is he's just a monster. Mm-hmm. I think that any discussion about Zion's basketball ability has to start with the fact that he's just a supreme, supreme athlete.
Yeah.
And if you look at his...
That's why he gets the LeBron comparisons, because of the type of athlete he is.
And he's not the same type of player as LeBron.
No, but I think that's why he gets the
I think he's probably most comparable to, like, Anthony Davis, Blake Griffin type
He
kind of
has a little bit of Charles Barkley in him, too, though.
Sure.
He's an undersized big man that can rebound pretty well. And yep. He can move really well. He moves a lot better than Charles did, even when Charles was in his prime. But I see a lot of that same toughness and a lot of that same just kind of attitude that maybe not this as much attitude as Chuck did, but because I mean Chuck's a Hall of Fame. Charles Barkley's a Hall of Famer. So
Charles Barkley's a Hall of Fame player and a Hall of Fame person. Let's be honest, and a Hall of Fame personality.
I mean, if you get someone that's close to what Charles Barkley was as a player, and I think he has a similar build and he has a similar frame and he has a similar athleticism to maybe even like
LeBron. Yeah, he's Charles Barkley if Charles Barkley could jump like LeBron.
Yeah. Which that's why we're talking about make sense. Can't miss. So the Cavs winning this lottery again would both be great for the Cavs and then also be hilarious because the NBA would probably call collusion.
Oh, you know, so many people would be upset.
Because a lot of national media people really don't want Cleveland to win because they're tired of – they think they keep getting lucky, which, to be fair, the lottery is luck. And yes, they did get the number one.
And I think
they did get Kyrie by getting Baron Davis.
It also goes into the Dan Gilbert thing. It's like the Cavs aren't winning the lottery because they're making smart decisions. They're winning the lottery because Dan Gilbert doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But so Zion is, we just named the player comparisons we just named for him were Charles Barkley, Anthony Davis, Blake Griffin, and LeBron James. Yeah. Okay. And I know it sounds truly insane, but I don't think we're setting the bar too high. I really don't.
And look, the Cavs fans something to cheer for.
He is not just one of the best prospects of recent memory. He's one of the most exciting.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6'7", and yet he dominates other big men. Because
he's 280.
He's 6'7", 280, tosses people out of his way, and yet he can jump 45 inches.
He blew himself out of his shoes.
He does things that don't look physically possible. It looks like you made a my player on NBA 2K, and you made him fat, but you made him able to jump. Except it's not fat; it's just girth and muscle.
Yeah,
and not only that,
he's all muscle, man.
Not only that, he has some passing ability. Mm-hmm. He's already an average-ish NBA shooter.
Yeah, he's got a good mid-range game. He's not like a long-range.
He shot 35% in college, which is a shorter three-point line, but 35% is not bad for a college player.
What about his free throw percentage?
Yeah, his free throw percentage is mediocre.
That's really the most indicative, I feel like, when it comes to like consistent shot. But again, he could do that in the NBA. But point being,
he's
the crown jewel of this draft.
He's also an absolutely dominant defensive player.
Yeah,
I mean, he makes defensive plays that. Here's another comparison. How about Hakeem Olajuwon? Seriously,
another undersized big.
Those are the type of plays he makes. I mean, he just blocks shots. Just rips the ball out of people's hands. Mm-hmm. He takes charges. And he's also an extremely high character player. The coaches he's had at various levels love him. People love playing with him. He absolutely is said to love the game of basketball. He plays with an extremely high motor.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely hard to find any holes in Zion Williamson as an NBA prospect. I think the only thing I'd be worried about is the fact that his body is so terrifically athletic that he ends up hurting himself. That's literally it.
Yeah, he doesn't develop a shot, or he doesn't develop certain things, and he's just a super athlete.
I think worst case scenario,
he's Draymond.
He's a defensive player of the year candidate that dunks on people 24/7 and averages 20 and 10 in the NBA. I think worst case, he's a 20-10 defensive player of the year candidate, and I really don't think I'm overstating it because if you watch him play, he looks like a goddamn monster. Okay, and if you look at his numbers. He's averaging like 3.5 blocks, 2.5 steals.
And let's all remember, college.
20 points, 10 rebounds.
He only plays like 28, 30 minutes a game in college.
And his percentage, he shoots like 74% on twos. And granted, he's dunking on college players, and the NBA is different. But even for the NBA,
get away with that.
Even for the NBA, he still has elite, elite athleticism.
He's definitely the best prospect probably since KD.
Okay. Honestly. Now that I'm done drooling over Zion Williamson, the Cavs have a 14% chance, which is about 1 in 7.
And there's still two – and we are just going to want to talk about because what we're hoping is that the Cavs get a top three pick. And there is three good players in this draft. And then after that, it kind of gets a little bit more murky.
I know what you're saying, but if you gave me a 50-50 shot at number one or number six, I would take it all day.
Me too. Absolutely.
If you gave me a 40-60 shot at that, I'd probably still take it.
You want Zion, but I think we still have to focus on some of the other consolation prizes.
Oh, yeah.
Because – John Morant from Murray State and R.J. Barrett, teammate of Zion Williamson's from Duke, are two prospects. They're not can't miss, but they're both very good prospects that could be good players to potential stars on an NBA team. And both of those picks, if the Cavs don't win the lottery and they don't get Zion, could still be very important picks to helping shape the team. Because let's put it this way. At this point, the Cavs just need talent. They're not picking for positional need. They're picking best player available.
Right.
And it depends on who – some people think John Morant is a really, really high-level player that could be one of the next best scorers in the NBA.
He's not the consensus number two, but he's the majority number two.
But he's not a very good defender. He played for lower competition at Murray State, so that's another question. But we've seen people in the past do it where, like, Steph Curry coming up or C.J. McCollum from Lehigh. We've seen guys come up from mid-majors and perform well.
He's also a two-year college player, not a one-year.
Right.
So if he would have came out after a freshman, he wasn't thought of as an NBA lottery pick.
Yeah.
But
And I don't think he would have
– John Morant is also an extremely athletic player.
Yeah.
He has a lot of dunk highlights. He's
very versatile offensively too.
Yeah, he averages, you know, in terms of points, rebounds, and assists, he's a complete package. And I think the comparison is Russell Westbrook, and I think it's an apt comparison because
he's super athletic.
He's a super athletic point guard who does everything, doesn't defend much, and doesn't shoot much.
Yeah, he's not a good defender. That's what people need to know. He's not a good defender.
He's a volume scorer at this point. Mm-hmm. But again, this kid, even though he's a 2-year college player, he's 20 years old.
Yeah.
So I think
that's plenty of time.
In terms of excitement, he is definitely the second most exciting player. And I think in most years, he would still be a top three pick. I think he's a legitimate top three pick.
I think if Zion was in this draft, people would be talking about him potentially going number one.
Well, sure. That's because he's the second best
player. That's what I'm saying. In a lot of other drafts, without a potential generational talent like Zion Williamson, he would be looked at as maybe the consensus number one.
Yeah, I don't
in that discussion.
I don't think Ja Morant is at the level of being a no doubt exciting number one pick overall.
Right. He's not.
But I think he's a legitimate top three pick. And I think next to Colin Sexton,
they'd be bad defensively, but they'd be fun to watch.
The defense will be a major problem because they're both undersized. And, you know, that could be a concern. I will say this. Colin Sexton may be best off the ball at this point in his career because he's not a good passer and he is a good shooter.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this year, the Cavs pigeonholed Colin Sexton as a point guard, despite the fact he doesn't really have any point guard skills.
He's a shooting guard.
Yeah,
he pretty much is.
I think maybe long term, you know, again, we're not going to write Colin Sexton off or say he's not going to be a starter for his career because he's, again, 20 years old.
No, and he improved a lot at the end of the year.
But I think maybe his best role is as a sixth man. And if Ja Morant takes over, it could begin to look like a Westbrook Harden type of thing. And God knows Colin Sexton's not James Harden. There's 0% chance.
If anything, I'd compare them to would be maybe their full potential would be maybe we're seeing like what's happening with the Trailblazers, where you have two dominant scoring guards that just don't play defense that well. And that system that Portland runs has had to change a lot of things because those two guys are undersized and
they can't
guard.
Those guys are still a lot bigger than Morant and Sexton.
Lillard's not that big. He's like
6'3". Lillard's like 6'1 or 6'2 and McCollum's like 6'4. That's still
Sexton's like 6'1 and then Morant's like 6'3. So I mean, yeah, it's two undersized guards, which in today's NBA is difficult, but
yeah.
You've seen the Blazers succeed with it this year, and I'm not saying that they will be the Blazers, but that's the best thing I can think of at the moment is two really good guards that are might not be great defensively, and you might have to build a system that prioritizes other players doing well defensively, but those guys can score.
Yeah, Ja Morant would still be an exciting pick. The number three pick, pretty much consensus number three, is RJ Barrett, Zion's teammate at Duke.
Yeah.
RJ Barrett is kind of a little bit of everything. He's almost like a jack of all trades type of wing. He's got good size. He's got good, not great athleticism. He's got a solid but not great shot. He's a pretty good passer. He can score a little bit. He can defend pretty well.
Actually, I've been saying for a while I thought he was Jimmy Butler, but actually a more apt comparison I feel like from his like Chris Middleton.
Yeah, Chris Middleton, if he was a little bit more of a playmaker maybe.
But like Chris Middleton has adapted that
stuff
over the years.
They've got similar size and length.
Yeah, and they both are not elite shooters. Like Middleton has just started to get to that point in his career where he's become a more consistent shooter, and part of that's because of Giannis. But I think it's just they have very similar profiles. They're very good at doing those things. They both can defend when given the opportunity. They're both tough guys, and I don't see.
I guess Chris Middleton averaged 4.5 assists a game this year. It's not bad.
Yeah, I don't see RJ Barrett as like a number one guy on a team, but I could definitely see him being your two or three.
I agree.
On a good team and being that guy that you need to have on your team to win the playoffs. He could be that guy in the future that he's guarding your best player while like if he plays for the Cavs, he might be guarding the best player in a series while the other whoever's left on the Cavs like offensively is trying to deal the scoring. He's going to be a good defender in the NBA because he tries really hard. He's very physical. And the reason I say Jimmy Butler is he's kind of sometimes because he kind of has that attitude. He's got that FU attitude to him. He's really tough.
I really like RJ Barrett.
So I would not be mad if the Cavs didn't get Zion and they had the second pick and they decided to pick him over Ja Morant. Yeah. I'd be totally okay with that.
I think I would be too. I think that's a really good debate for number two. And I think most people would take Morant just because of the numbers and the statistics. But I think when you consider the fact that Morant's 2-year guy and he's playing a lot lower level of competition. I don't know. I think.
Yeah. I mean, Morant had really good statistics at Murray State, and he showed up.
Oh, yeah.
He showed up in the tournament this past year and pretty much carried Murray State to where they got.
And Morant is a guy that can run your offense.
Yeah.
Barrett is more of a secondary playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just.
So then that'd be an issue of who's going to be the lead guy for the Cavs. And that'd be something you'd figure out as the years go on, because obviously those, that's not your finished product. So you might be able to add a playmaking guard at some point later on, or maybe this is, or is this the year you decide, you know, John Morant's too good to pass up. We have to get another playmaker.
I think the point
is difficult, but it's a good debate.
I think the point is I would be very excited if the Cavs get any of the top three picks.
Me too.
If the Cavs get Zion, I mean, it is truly, it's truly a franchise changing result.
I'm going to be like that kid running around screaming, "We got Odell.
Yeah, exactly.
We got Zion.
Yeah.
We got Zion.
I mean, tomorrow is going to be, it's a massive day for the Cavs and for the NBA. I mean, like a team like the Knicks, who has been just despondent for so long.
Everyone in the NBA offices, they want the Knicks.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
If Zion's on the Knicks, that is going to drive ratings.
Which would make the Cavs getting Zion all that much better to me.
Yeah, and it'd be such, but just even to see if Bill Simmons squirm.
Even if the Cavs don't get Zion, I would be really excited by top three pick. Now, we can talk about the rest of the players in this draft at a later date, but this draft is not deep in high-end talent.
There are like five or six good players.
Are like three legitimate top three draft picks in this year's draft.
Yeah, those we guys the are, other Duke guy
those
would be
guys,
good.
Those guys are legit top three picks. Yeah. That's true. But four through whatever,
that's pretty much the same.
The rest of the lottery is weaker than average.
Yeah. And I think, not like last year's draft where we had seven really good players taken.
Right.
Or eight good players, nine, depending on how you feel about Sexton, maybe nine of the 10 players being good contributors to the NBA.
And I think the thing with the Cavs is, if the Cavs don't, if let's say the Cavs get the fourth pick and they get their pick of all those guys, do you really trust the Cavs to get it right?
No.
I don't either, especially considering.
Not if Gilbert's making the calls.
Again, that's what I'm going to say, is especially considering the fact that Dan Gilbert seems to,
seems to have the last word.
He seems to be the guy that makes a lot of these choices. And I think, the Colin Sexton pick, we'll see. But I think it's very intriguing if the Cavs don't get a top three pick to see what Kobe Altman does with it. Because I would trade the pick. Well,
to get younger assets, maybe over a long period of time. Because we both know this, the Cavs are going to be bad for a long time.
Sure, yeah.
So if they aren't going to get RJ Barrett or Zion or Ja Morant, or maybe some of these other guys move up and they just don't like them, you can probably trade that pick for a young cost controlled player for a team that maybe just needs to move some salary, and you get some younger players that maybe have more upside.
Like Jason Tatum.
It could be.
I'm just making a joke about the fact that everyone thought Jason Tatum was next Kobe. But
I'm just talking about like young players on their next contract for a team that maybe needs that pick. It could make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
With the Cavs.
If I
don't get a top three pick, I'm kind of disappointed, because those three
players
can make such big impacts on the team, and the Cavs aren't going to fix it in 1 year, but they need to get another person in there, because I think we both understand that Sexton's peak is probably not going to be as a lead player on the team. He's going to be a supporting cast member, and we need someone to at least step up and for now be that guy that we can.
Sure, I just don't think you go off trading the fourth pick in the draft just because you didn't get
coverage. You don't trade it for pennies. You have to get a great offer. If not, you stay there and you take the best player.
I think the Cavs have to trust themselves to scout and pick the best player. And again, if they don't get a top three pick, I just really hope that Dan Gilbert can stay out of the way, because I don't trust him as a basketball evaluator, because he's an owner of a team, not a basketball front office member. But anyways, we'll talk more about the lottery later this week when we record. But for now, let's just really, really hope the Cavs get top three pick. And if the Cavs get Zion, it's just going to be – I mean, it's going to be just one of the most fantastic –
Cleveland's going to be the center of the party universe again.
I know it. We have a couple more things to talk about around the NBA. We'll be right back after this break.
And we are back. So, Grant is laughing about a joke I made about an old NBA player. we're going off the rails here. We could re-record this, but we're not going to, because we are entertained by ourselves.
I just think of he was talking about Al Harrington, and in one of the games we used to play with Al Harrington, NBA, every time he'd score, it'd be Al Harrington.
It was classic. And also, Al Harrington's like an advocate for pot. Al Harrington convinced David Stern that pot should be legal. That's amazing. That's just, shout out to Al Harrington for being a cool dude. So anyways, we are here to talk about the rest of the NBA playoffs, which again, the Cavs are not a part of or anywhere near being a part of. But if they get Zion, you never know.
But there were still some really good series. Specifically, what we were hoping for was going to be in the East, where we had the top four teams in the East. And all year, we were really excited because we're like, finally, the East has four good teams.
There. Yeah. And it turns out the East had three good teams.
No, it turns out the East had two good teams. And we'll get into that. But first, let's start with the most lopsided series, the
Milwaukee Bucks destroying the Kyrie Irving and the Boston Celtics.
Kyrie Irving's a fraud.
It's so sweet. It's so sweet.
Well, I'm just going to go on like a little brief tangent and we can just move on. Okay.
And we're going to hate Kyrie. That's my tangent.
We're going to dance on the grave. Okay. And everyone can say that Kyrie hit the biggest shot in the history of the Cleveland Cavaliers, which he totally did.
It's true.
And I'm not going to try and take that away from him.
Hey, he helped us win a championship.
Yep.
But screw that guy.
Yeah, so Kyrie Irving basically threw a fit to get himself out of Cleveland. And the only reason he did get out of Cleveland is because Dan Gilbert, we've been over this. Okay.
Yeah.
And Kyrie Irving has spent the last 2 years in Boston talking about how he's a leader and how basically get these kids off my lawn, they don't know how to play, and how you've heard all the analysts say, wow, Kyrie has really developed out of LeBron's shadow. He's passing way more. He's defending harder than he ever has.
That lasted like 20 bullshit. Games. That's like 20 games.
He's averaging basically the same assists a game as he has his whole career. He still dies on screens. The team loses a couple games. He just gives up.
Yeah.
Game 6 or game 5, they didn't even get to game 6. Game 5, the clinching game.
He was terrible.
He was like something terrible, like 6 of 19 or something.
Yeah, he just didn't care.
He had one assist. He stopped caring. He basically blamed the young players every time something bad happened. Brad Stevens is supposed to be the greatest coach in the history of the NBA and clearly couldn't even control his own team.
He didn't do a good job.
Anyways, screw you, Boston. You suck. How about that?
Yeah, and I'd want Milwaukee to win just because I love you. Along with Boston, just I hate Boston. Giannis is so fun to watch, bro. And I've been riding the Milwaukee bandwagon for a few years now, and I finally got it right.
Well, they just had to get a new coach.
Well, and they had to
Jason Kidd's clearly not going to be a head coach, but he might be the coach of the Lakers by midseason.
They also had to get new players because they were running out players like Thon McCurr and other random dudes.
Side note, do you know what's sad? LeBron left the Cavs because they're dysfunctional, and he might be in an even more dysfunctional team now.
At least he has sunshine.
But you know what? Yeah, I was going to say, it's what happens when you leave for non-basketball reasons.
I mean, yeah, it is what it is. Yeah. But I mean,
so
the Celtics,
Al Horford is a nice player. Okay? He's a good player and he's a good teammate. And all the NBA nerds love to freaking drool over him.
He was bad in the playoffs.
He's not a legit number two for a contending team. I'm sorry.
No.
Jason Tatum was supposed to be the second coming of, I don't know, Kobe Bryant, Jesus Christ, whatever.
Yeah.
He's not. I mean, look, he might be a really good player, okay? But I don't really hate Boston, even though it's like a racist city or whatever. I didn't say that.
Whatever. I don't hate the city. I just hate the team.
Well, look, we all know Boston fans are the most obnoxious fans there are. They're entitled. They're loud.
They've won a lot of championships, so they.
There
like
are
you
nice
said,
people
yeah.
from Boston.
Yeah,
there are good people from Boston. There are players I like on the Celtics, but what really bothers me is the media always seems to go far out of their way to praise Kyrie on the Celtics or Brad Stevens or whatever. And ultimately, the Celtics this year were frauds.
Yeah, they were the pick by most experts to play in the finals against Golden State.
And they beat the Bucks in game one, and everyone was talking – Paul Pierce is talking all this crap about how the series is over. And then the frauds lost 4 in a row. And let me just say I'm happy to see it happen because all this crap was talked about how – the culture in Cleveland is to blame for Kyrie and how his attitude's going to change. He's a leader and all this crap, and none of it's true. And now he's going to leave Boston just like he left Cleveland, confused and without an asset.
And
I just want to say that everyone who talked crap about Cleveland and blamed Cleveland or the Cavs for Kyrie Irving's attitude is wrong because Kyrie Irving's attitude is because of Kyrie Irving.
If I'm a Boston fan,
that's all I'm going to say.
I'm hoping he leaves if I'm a Boston fan. Something about the talent on this team just did not work together. On paper, this was probably the most talented team in the NBA outside of the Warriors. They were, like I said, they were projected by a lot of experts to be in the finals to even challenge the Warriors because everyone looked at the team on paper and they're like, well, Gordon Hayward's going to come back from his injury and he'll be his old self, which he was terrible for the first half of the year and wasn't really good until March.
Yeah,
and then he got
the
hesitant
playoffs.
In the playoffs.
Yeah, it's kind of sad about Hayward.
Sad for him specifically. But
look, Kyrie Irving's not a number one.
And he's supposed to be the leader of that
People
team.
People have been saying Kyrie Irving's not a number one. He's just not. Not on a contending team, he's not. And, Jason Tatum, I think people expected too much too soon.
He was also put in a bad position because last year in the playoffs, they were playing without a couple guys, and he was forced to be.
Well, he was great last year.
Yeah, because he was given role that suits him better.
Yeah, but for a player his age on the stage he was at, it was incredible last year.
It was.
But that said, he still doesn't really get to the rack. He doesn't really draw free throws. He's mostly a volume mid-range shooter at this point in his career. And look, he's like 19 or 20, 21, whatever age he is. I think he's going to be really good. But I just think people go so far out of their way to try and be the first one to exclaim something. This is what happens. And quite frankly, I'm happy the Celtics are gone because A, I'm tired of hearing about them, and B, I'm tired of people acting like Kyrie Irving is something different than he is. He's a really good crunch time scorer who is a ideal number two for a lot of championship level teams, but he's not a number one. He's not a leader. And quite frankly, he'd be annoying as hell to play with.
I mean, he pulled a full 180 for the Celtics this year from their season tickets thing saying, I'll stay if you'll have me to ask me July 1st what I'm going to do.
And it's just,
and as soon as he said that, you could kind of tell that team was just going to be, was just checked out. Cause they're like, all right, screw you, man.
He just tanks the attitude of the team.
So I think honestly, like to finish the point, they might be better without him because his attitude and the way he tried to lead in that locker room was terrible for them. And part of the fault was Brad Stevens not being able to handle the talent that he had and make it work. But Kyrie's just as much to blame because if he wants to be the leader, he has to understand that that comes with the blame too. And he deserves a good brunt of it.
That said, the Milwaukee Bucks are freaking good.
And they are the best team in the NBA, maybe. They have been all year.
Well,
I mean, Golden State's still the champs, but all year, Milwaukee has played unbelievable basketball. And adding those players at the deadline, like Nikola Mirotic, and adding Brook Lopez, like those dudes are perfect for Giannis because he can just drive to the rim and kick it to any of those guys. And Brook Lopez is basically Steph Curry at this point. Giannis, he's shooting.
Giannis is a terror.
Yeah, and
you know who else is a terror? You know who else is a terror? Kawhi Leonard.
Yes.
Kawhi Leonard sent the Sixers home, game seven at home. Tie game, 4 seconds left. He basically launches himself into the corner, kind of like that LeBron game against the Bulls a few years back.
Yeah, this one was crazier because I don't think I think LeBron had a plan for what he was going to do. I don't think Kawhi had a plan. I think he realized there was like a second left on the clock. He dribbled from basically the left side all the way to the right with Embiid sitting in his face. And Embiid contested the shot well. Yeah. And then Kawhi just throws up a prayer and it bounces off the rim four times before going in.
Also different, I don't think that Toronto's coach Nick Nurse designed a play for someone other than Kawhi Leonard to take the shot.
Of course not.
Like David Blatt did with LeBron. But anyways, so Kawhi is – I think what happens with Kawhi is he's so quiet and he's so mechanical about the way he plays. People – and he rested quite a bit this season, whatever. And I think people – it's like when Kawhi has one of those dominant stretches in the playoffs where he's defending the hell out of everybody and hitting all these shots and looking impossible to guard, everyone's like – oh my God, he might be a top five NBA player. But Kawhi Leonard has been a top five NBA player.
Like 3 years.
When he's healthy, he is one of the 3 to 5 guys you'd want in any playoff series. I think after.
Honestly, it's after LeBron and KD, it's him.
It might. He's.
I'd put him over Giannis right now.
He's right there.
Right now, just because he's a more overall better player on offense and he is just as good of a defender as Giannis.
You know what? Good for Toronto because Toronto's been a punching bag for a long time, mostly because the Cavs destroyed them every year.
Well, imagine this same situation.
It's good for them. They have a really great fan base, and I think they are so hungry. And, you know, not to say that Philly fans are hungry too, but
I was getting kind of tired of Philly fans.
I think it's good for Toronto to finally get over that hump, at least to get to the conference finals. And I think they have a legitimate chance of beating the Bucks. I mean, it's going to be. That is a heavyweight matchup, man. And I think Giannis and Kawhi, how much they guard each other. And you've got Siakam and Middleton who are kind of similar type bodies.
And they can switch off.
They don't play necessarily the same, but they have similar kind of attributes in some senses. And I just think it's going to be a fascinating series. But also, this offseason for the Sixers is going to be fascinating. I mean, Joel Embiid played 46 minutes in Game 7.
He can't do that.
And I mean, you're just watching the game. And they've got Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons, and those two guys,
J.J. Redick.
Well, yeah, but I'm fine with Redick as a floor spacer late in the game, but Simmons is just standing in the dunker spot, and Harris is just standing in the corner while Embiid and Butler play high pick and roll. And look, Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid high pick and roll, there's nothing wrong with that, but they had their offense down the stretch was just run a pick, dribble. They got like, what was it, like they almost got 3 shot clock violations in a row. And look, Toronto's a really good defensive team, but I think Brett Brown might be on the chopping block because Embiid playing 46 minutes is just malpractice because
you're going to hurt him.
Well, it's not even that. Look, it's a game seven, so I get it. Like, you've got to play what you've got to play in a game seven, but down the stretch, he's just like,
if he's exhausted, he's not giving you good minutes.
Yeah. He's just limping out there and he didn't get a post touch like the whole fourth quarter, and he's just chucking threes or setting screens and just lumbering around looking like he's about to collapse.
Because he's not built for this kind of...
That's what I'm saying. But the problem is they put him on the bench for 2 minutes and they went minus nine.
Yeah.
And
they didn't plan for this. They didn't plan to have a backup.
This entire series, they got destroyed whenever he wasn't out there. Yeah. And I think that's the thing about Philly going forward is Philly's starting five is rivaling anyone starting five in the NBA, but they didn't have depth. It's still unclear whether Brett Brown's a good enough of a tactical coach to lead a team in the finals. And
they can't pay all five of those guys.
Butler and Harris and Redick are all free agents. And I think it's a fascinating offseason for them.
I think you have to pick two of the three of them. And then you have to, if I'm them and me and Andrew and all of the other hosts of the Red and Blue podcast talked about this a couple weeks ago when we were hanging out. You have to consider the fact that maybe Ben Simmons just isn't a good fit in Philadelphia and that you might just have to get rid of him.
Well, Embiid's the guy going forward.
Embiid is the face of that franchise. Yeah. Ben Simmons, if he can't improve his game, which he has not really improved at all since he entered the league.
Well, and it's a stylistic thing. I mean, I think Ben Simmons is going to be a really good NBA player, but he can't shoot even – I mean, he can't even shoot
– He's just useless in the playoffs.
He can't even shoot in the mid-range. He's not useless. He guarded Kawhi, and he was decent at that, and he can still run the fast break. But this is the thing is, when the game slows down – That's Embiid style, okay?
Yeah.
Ben Simmons is a space and pace type of player, except he doesn't provide the space. You need the spacing around him.
Yeah.
And Embiid is, you know, Embiid can shoot, but for Embiid to not get a post touch the whole fourth quarter, I just don't understand it. And I'm not one of those guys who's like, we have to go back to old school NBA where everyone's just backing people down. But
no, but he's one of your best players. So.
And they weren't scoring. Yeah. And Embiid's one of the only guys on the team that can manufacture points.
It was basically either Jimmy Butler scored or no one did.
And that's the problem is Simmons and Embiid stylistically are total opposite players.
Yeah, they clash.
And I think it can work. And I don't think you have to dump Simmons just to get rid of him because he's still, I think, a potential all-pro player year in and year out. It's just, you know, and plus, like we said – they've got three other high-end free agents. And I think figuring out who to keep and what other pieces to acquire is going to be a really fascinating offseason for them. And I think I think going forward, they probably have to keep Simmons one more year at least to see how it can work.
The only reason I would say you would trade Simmons is because, like you said, with those players, if you want to keep some of those guys, you might be able to do it for a year. But Simmons is going to be up for an extension soon, and he's going to get the max. That's just how it is. He's a young player that's performed really well in the regular season and had some moments. He's going to get the max or close to it.
Oh, yeah.
So Philly's not going to be able to afford all those guys. Yeah. So they're going to have to make it. I think they're going to have to make a decision on, okay, we're going to have to keep Jimmy, JJ, and Tobias Harris. One of them has to go.
I think one or two.
But yeah, well, bare minimum, one of them's gone.
At least this offseason. And then going forward,
so
maybe two.
If you pay two of them, let's say you pay Tobias Harris $20-plus million, which he's worth,
yeah,
and you pay Jimmy Butler $27, $28 million, which he is worth, Simmons is going to command $25, $26 million, and Bede's commanding that. You're going to run out of cap space, and you're going to be the worst version of the Warriors.
This is the problem is we don't know how Ben Simmons fits with any of these guys, really. I mean, they didn't have a lot of time together this season anyway.
True.
But we don't know how Simmons fits with Embiid or the rest of these guys. And I think Jimmy Butler is a really good fit with Embiid. The problem is Embiid and the Sixers are still a younger team, and Jimmy Butler's getting old. I think Tobias Harris doesn't fit quite as well with those guys, but he's the younger player. And I just think it's going to be a fascinating offseason, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the future. If Brett Brown's gone, you very well might just see them all go and just a complete restart where it's just Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons again. Yeah. Or a new guy will come in. He'll try to keep those guys and try to switch players around.
I think they have to sign Butler or Harris because I don't think you can let both of those guys
walk. No, you have to pick one of them.
They traded a lot of assets for those two guys, and I think – you can really argue about whether that was the smart thing to do because they've accelerated.
No, they went for it.
They accelerated their timeline so much, but they never actually figured out what the best stylistic fit was for this team. And they accelerated the timeline without a plan.
They just kind of traded for talented players.
They have burned off a lot of assets. And the problem is if those talented players were under contract or were younger, you'd have more time to figure it out. But they gave themselves almost no time. I think ideally they would have figured out whether Butler or Harris was the better fit. I think Butler's the better fit, but Harris is the younger player.
And he's going to command less money. So that's how you play into it.
I'm not sure he's going to command less. It'll be barely less if it is.
compared to Butler,
maybe less per year, but over the course of the deal, maybe more.
Yeah, but years. That's what I'm saying. If you're trying to keep Simmons long term too, yeah. You're going to have to pay him eventually, and that's when all these bills are going to start to come due.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I say you maybe trade Simmons, because if you want to keep any of those guys, they're going to be expensive, and it will work for a year. But as soon as Simmons' rookie contract is up, it's not valuable.
I think if you trade Simmons, you have to get a monster haul.
You do. You can't trade him.
And I don't know if you can get that right now.
You can't. I think this might be the best value. I
don't
know if you can
get the right fit, is what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. I mean,
LeBron for Ben Simmons.
Yeah, right. How would you like to run that team right now? I mean, it's just massive franchise-altering decisions to be made this summer.
I wouldn't want to be that GM right now. That's Elton
Brand.
That's going to change.
Elton Brand's like a brand new GM too. I said brand new, but
yeah. It's going to change the face of the franchise, because they looked like they were really just – they had the process, and they were building to a point where they were going to be maybe one of the dominant teams in the league. And now they – like you said, they accelerated the timeline fast, and it's just going to be a big question mark.
Out West – there was a fascinating series that was really fun, and a series that was quite frankly annoying as hell to watch every minute of. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's just get Houston Golden State out of the way.
So Houston,
thank God it's over.
Houston, like Boston, are frauds. And I don't even know if they're frauds, but Chris Paul got old quick, and that's the problem.
They're just so boring to watch.
Houston just ISOs and chucks threes.
And tries to draw fouls and complain at the refs.
And then Golden State's just annoying. Yells the refs constantly. And it's a brutal series to watch. It's a slog.
Do you know how hard it is to watch that game when every 20 seconds there's a foul?
Well, and the Warriors are supposed to be this beautiful game, you know, free-flowing offense. But they've kind of gotten away from that the more KD's been around, because
– well, now – except – and then when he got hurt,
yeah,
they played really well without him.
Yeah. Well,
because they knew how to do that already.
I think everyone assuming that the Rockets would advance or at least get a game seven once KD went out
– they forgot how good those three were together.
Yeah, and Draymond is having a good postseason.
He's having a really good postseason.
He had a bad season, but he's having a good postseason.
Curry,
and I guess
Curry,
he lost like 25 pounds, yeah, which is kind of crazy.
Curry did it when it mattered most, but Klay Thompson kept them in that game in game six. Yep. We've seen
that before.
In the first half, he pretty much kept them in that game because Steph was playing really badly in terms of scoring. He was.
And
not
I still don't think that Steph Curry at this point in his career can carry a team. I think if Kevin Durant was out the remainder of this postseason, I don't think the Warriors would win the title.
Yeah, it's
but
it's
that said, but Houston ultimately.
Houston Chris had a one-year
Chris
window.
Paul got old quick.
Yeah,
Clint Capella
shrank.
The more the NBA goes towards this spacing, I think, you know, he looked like an ideal kind of pick and dive type of guy.
He looked like better Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, but. I don't know. The Warriors kind of played him off the court for a lot of this series, and I think the Rockets just ultimately couldn't make the right adjustments. I mean, they kind of had their system, and it seemed like Mike D'Antoni, for whatever reason, and look, again, they didn't have a lot of depth, and that's another problem, is they didn't really have a lot of pieces
they
to move around.
They gave up a lot of it in the offseason. They got lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Richard Mabamute.
And the Rockets and the Warriors don't have depth either, but the Warriors have an identity, and they have
better players.
No, the
Warriors have star players, yeah. Look,
the Warriors have Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
And Draymond.
Yeah. And that's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
Kevin Durant's hurt, but he's coming back. So is Boogie Cousins.
But you saw how good they were even without Durant. So, they're going to be a problem regardless. And Houston,
I think the Raptors – or the Bucks could give Golden State at least a run for their money, but I think barring injury, this is still Warriors getting a title in five or six.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really good series because I think it really depends on how you feel about the Warriors, who you think drives that Warriors train. I've always said it's Steph Curry.
Kevin Durant's still their best player, and we've seen Kevin Durant shut LeBron's water off.
I've also said that
no one does that.
If Steph Curry gets hurt or Steph Curry doesn't play well, it is a lot more difficult for the Warriors to win than if Durant has an off night.
Yes, but I think that's also because people forget how good Kevin Durant's defense is. And even if Kevin Durant has a bad offensive game, he's still the best defender on the team, even with Draymond being healthier.
Yeah, and Kevon Looney's been really impressing and becoming a very good center for them. And
yeah, I mean, basically, he's a legit small ball center.
Basically playing Clint Capella out of the game. Yeah.
Andre Iguodala hit 5 threes in game six, which is like, where did that come from?
I was pretty angry.
But that doesn't surprise
me,
you know? Andre Iguodala's been around a long time.
He's clutch, man.
Yeah.
He's clutch.
I think whoever wins, we know now it's Portland that won between Portland and Denver. I don't see them giving the Warriors a major series. I have a lot of respect for Portland, and I think they're going to play their asses off, but I just don't think they have a talent to match up with the Warriors.
The problem is, both of them are going to have to go off.
That said, Game 7 of Portland-Denver was...
That was awesome.
It is awesome. It was
so awesome.
It wasn't really, like, the most awesome game. Denver made, like, no shots, and...
Lillard was bad.
Lillard was... Well, really bad. Lillard didn't make shots, but he had, like, 10 assists, yeah, which at least he was running the offense.
C.J. McCollum had a out-of-body game.
C.J. McCollum, Northeast Ohio boy.
Yeah, Canton native.
Yes, sir. C.J. McCollum had...
37.
The biggest game of his career by a long shot. And he also had a great game last game. I mean, look, see, there's been a lot of talk about they've got to trade C.J. McCollum.
They have to get rid of one of them, yeah.
And look, C.J. McCollum just had a monster game 6-7.
They wouldn't be here without him.
And I think, you know, Jokic for Denver is...
Can we all agree he's like a top 6 or 7 player in the NBA at this point?
Yeah, he's top 10 for sure.
Yeah, he almost averaged a triple-double in the playoffs. He averaged 29 points, 13 rebounds, and 9 assists while shooting 50% from the field, almost 40% from three, and almost 90% from the line. As a center!
Yeah, he's dominant, and he's a great player. And I think all that thing about will it translate the playoffs, totally it is. But I think Denver's problem is they don't have a number two player
right
now. They
need a second star.
They don't have a wing or guard that can really command double teams and run the offense. I mean, Jamal Murray's inconsistent. Gary Harris is a secondary player. Michael Porter Jr. coming back is fascinating. But I think the reason that series was so entertaining was a lot of the games were higher scoring. This game 7 was kind of ugly. But both teams play hard, and they both have players you don't hate, and they don't complain at the refs constantly.
Yeah.
And I just think that stylistically, watching Rockets-Warriors is a pain. And watching those two teams is almost like a purer form of basketball. Not to say that, I mean, look, the Warriors are one of the best teams in NBA history over the
just those past two teams years, specifically but, playing each other. Yeah. Watching it is kind of like watching paint dry to me. It's just like they.
But Portland and Denver were really evenly matched.
Yeah,
Enes Kanter has like a separated shoulder, and he's playing like 35 minutes a game. It's
you also
insane.
Know he's not eating during games, right? Because he's
yes, I'm aware.
Yeah, because he's doing Ramadan and stuff. Like
yeah,
that,
I mean it's. So. I mean, look, that's. What would Mark Jackson say? That's a bad man.
I mean, shout out to him for staying true to his beliefs and his religion. But that
and a lot of people thought
it makes a minute restriction for him.
Well, and he was also the can't play Kanter because of his defense. But he's actually been
doing really well on defense. Not elite, but he's been trying
he's
really
been like
well.
Average-ish.
He's been trying really hard. He's been closing down on the ball when people get to him, and when he's at the rim, he's not a shot blocker, but he's a shot manipulator. So because of his height, and they're missing him a lot in some of these playoffs because of the Ramadan stuff, because of that he can't drink water or eat when it's light out. So if they play a game when it's light out, it's really hard to play him a lot of minutes because he's going to have severe problems because he will get dehydrated and he will not be able to eat. So that's a big problem for them. But at the same time, without him, after losing Jusuf Nurkić, probably wouldn't be where they are.
Yeah. And that's the thing is Nurkić was thought to be the injury that would kind of, you know,
derail them.
It would, yeah. And by the way, Enes Kanter played 40 minutes in game 7 in the middle at 12:30 West Coast time. So I don't know about all that, but it is impressive that
he's doing this without having pretty much anything in his system. Yeah. So
it's impressive. And
he's basically using reserves.
He's like ultimate toughness. I mean, 40 minutes. Again, he's got like a separated shoulder.
He's got a separated shoulder and he's hungry and thirsty.
It's yeah. And again, that team was thought to be buried when they lost Nurkić, which myself included.
It's a great redemption story for Portland just because of how last year ended when they got absolutely destroyed by the Pelicans.
Game 7, Dame time. Damian Lillard has hit all these insane shots, including the series ender against OKC, which is legendary.
Yeah.
3 of 17, and they win in Denver. And look, that's not a great loss for Denver.
Yeah, Denver should have been.
Ultimately, Jokic played great.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the team pretty much collapsed around him.
Yeah.
But still.
They're a young team.
I think I've gained a lot of respect for Portland and the fact that, I don't know, that team just seems to be willing itself onto the next round.
Terry Stotts showed a lot of people how underrated he is again. Because like we said, last year they
Imagine if Terry Stotts was the Cavs coach. That'd be amazing.
Last year they had a really big blemish because of the Pelicans. Well, we had Mike Malone. We just didn't want to keep him.
Yeah. So, honestly, in terms of the second round, I mean, it's been...
It was a good second round.
It's been one of the – I mean, the crazy thing is going into the second round, the thought was the championship game is Warriors-Rockets, and this was setting up to be like an all-time great series. That series was a complete dud, but the other two series, especially, you know, Portland-Denver
Toronto-Philly
were both such good series that this was a great second round.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the conference finals could be really exciting.
I'm excited for Giannis versus Kawhi and the Blazer boys versus versus the Warriors.
For now, let's hope Kevin Durant takes a few games to come back.
Take your time, KD.
And Portland can give the Warriors a scare.
Take your time and then go to New York.
Let's hope that everyone stays healthy in the East so we can get the series we need.
Yeah.
And
hopefully Kawhi doesn't take 39 shots next game.
And maybe the Cavs get Zion.
Yeah.
Maybe they get RJ Barrett. Maybe they get nobody. We'll find out tomorrow night. We'll be back later this week once the lottery is complete. We'll figure out our work schedules. You know, the food service life is a rough life sometimes. Mm-hmm. But we'll get a pot in for sure. If the Cavs get Zion, I might just call Graham remotely and we can just rant for 5 minutes and post that just so you guys can hear our reactions. But for now, big, big night in the next for the next few years of the Cavaliers franchise, and we'll find out what happens.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. Make sure to check us out, the Tree City Records podcast, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We're everywhere. I'm at @abaker_sports on Twitter. He's at @gtmohan. Mm-hmm. Check out the Red and Blue, you know, big time for European soccer right now, which, let's face it, is the best soccer.
Of course.
And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you, guys.
Peace.